Blog Talk Radio.
Buckle up and get ready to ride this cosmic wave of knowledge. Talk Radio. It's time to reach beyond the limitations of your mind. A time to travel where the impossible is now possible. As we travel around the world in search of the truth. And now, author, international clairvoyant, and Earth Mysteries investigator, Betsy Lewis.
Betsy Lewis.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Stargate Radio. This evening, I have a really special guest. She's Colorado's MUFON director, Katie Page, who has her personal ties to high strangeness at the Clearview Ranch in Colorado. That's probably more bizarre than the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah and predates it over a decade. Katie is also a star investigator for MUFON and is the team lead administrator for MUFON's Mars team. She is the host of MUFON What's Up Radio on KGRADB.com. And Katie has been on many, many TV shows, the Travel Channel, UFO Witness, Gaia's Beyond Belief with George Norrie, History Channel's Ancient Aliens, Small Town Monsters, On the Trail of UFO Night Visitors, Ron James' film Accidental Truth, and the new TV series Beyond Skinwalker, and I love that one. Katie also conducts independent investigations and research, and she has been a presenter at several conferences and appeared on many radio shows, including Coast to Coast with George Knapp. Katie is the author of Letters of Love and Light, Four Decades of UFO Encounters, Experiences, and Sightings Shared with Ufologist R. Leo Sprinkle, PhD. She is currently writing her new book, and that's called High Strangeness on a Colorado Ranch, the Colorado Skinwalker Ranch, Craft, Cattle, Copters, Cryptids, and Cover-Ups. Her website is Katie Page, and Page is PAIGE.net. Hey, Katie, are you there? Let me bring you on, Katie.
Honored to be here.
There
you
are.
Okay?
Yeah, you sound great. Thank you for joining the show.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. It's such an honor. And speaking of Dr. Leo Sprinkle, today is his heavenly birthday. So happy heavenly birthday, Dr. Leo Sprinkle. He was such a loving, giving man and was so generous with just so many contactees and abductees throughout the years. And he did past life regressions and hypnosis. And that's so it just happens to be his heavenly birthday today. So that's kind of cool.
Wow. Well, he passed away November 20th, 21, right at the age of 91. That was amazing. I was reading some of the things that he wrote. He sounded like a very spiritual man and just an incredible man. And what an honor to know someone like that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, he was such a pioneer. And going through, I'm a person who just loves to dig into archives and old newspaper articles. And, you know, so going back and forth and doing this book project for Dr. Sprinkle, which took me 3 years of going back and forth to his archives and digging through his 40-plus years of work, I got the chance to get to know him fairly well. And he took... In his position being a PhD, you know, back in the late 60s and 70s and into the 80s, he really took some hard knocks. So he took it for the team as far as people, you know, giving him a hard time for being so spiritual and believing the things that he did, you know, was really outside of the box back then. We have the advantage of people not looking at you so sideways anymore when you tell them what you do. you know, this has changed.
Right.
Because, you know, since... just recently. So, yeah, so
yeah,
I know he's smiling down at all of us, and I'm sure he's really excited about all the recent happenings within ufology, you know, the hearings and whatnot. So,
so everybody's coming out of the closet now, Katie.
Yeah, it's okay to be, you know, whatever you want to be nowadays, and that's a good thing.
That's right. That's right. You know, I was telling you that I listened to your presentation, and what a great presentation at the Ozark conference. When was that? How long ago was that?
Oh, my goodness. That's been, what, 3 months ago now?
Oh,
I'm
really?
I'm flying by the summer. Summer's going by quickly.
Well, of all the things that you talked about, the one that I found that was hard to believe is you said you're a grandmother. I can't believe that.
Yeah, a few times over now, I have a little granddaughter,
really?
Molly.
Oh,
and Kristen. Congratulations. Yeah, so... Well, thank you. Grandkids are the best, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm a great-grandmother now. So.
Oh, that's so neat.
Yeah. So let's go back to you. And now, did you actually grow up at the Clearwater, or you knew it, or you were there a lot? How did that work?
Well, this was the mid-70s. I was a young girl at the time, and my mother... Speaking of 91, she's 91 years old now, and she's still with us. But my mother, computer operator for United Airlines, and their facility for that is here in Colorado. And she started dating a gentleman, and he owned the ranch property. So the owner of the ranch property had three boys, three sons. Two of the sons, the two youngest sons, lived with us during the week. So we would commute back and forth to the ranch because her mom lived there full-time and his older brothers lived there full-time. And so my sister and I both had unique experiences there individually, and then we had combined experiences on the property. And what's really fascinating to me is we never knew anybody knew anything about this property at all. It was sort of like this family secret, and we were warned and threatened by, well, this strange disembodied electrical voice, which we'll get to later, but also my mom and her boyfriend at the time, who is now deceased as well, they told us not to talk about the happenings at the ranch. And at the time, it was known as the Clearview Ranch, and it wasn't until 2013 when I purchased Kim Kelleher and George Knapp's book, Hunt for the Skinwalker, that I even knew anybody knew anything about it, because they mentioned the Colorado Ranch in that book. And up until that point, it was just in folklore and through APRO known as the Clearview Ranch, because the townspeople and the police officers at the time didn't want the true location of the ranch known. And so it wasn't until Katie came along with her big mouth and said, oh, no, it's in Elbert County, Colorado. And, you know, and in that book, was when I learned that Dr. Leo Sprinkle, PhD, he was an investigator with APRO, and also two other PhDs were also investigating the ranch property at the time, Peter Van Arsdale and John Durr, one of which was a seismologist. And I also come to find out that Linda Moulton Howe was an investigative journalist out here in Colorado at the time and was very involved in the rash of cattle mutilations happening out there at the time. In fact, she did a film called Strange Harvest, and they interview the sheriff of Elbert County, George Yarnell, in that film, as well as the undersheriff, Bill Law. So, you know, it's been now over a decade of just digging deep into all these weird phenomenon that were occurring out there on the ranch property. And for me, and for my sister and my mom as well, it's such a personal if you're an experiencer, you'll know what I'm talking about, but especially when you're told as a young girl not to talk about the things that happen. So you learn quickly to be quiet and almost be ashamed or, I hate to use the word fearful, but in a sense, fearful of even talking about the things that occurred out there. So, you know, it's a matter of investigating, processing. So, you know, it's been an interesting journey, to say the least.
I guess. Well, I did some investigation on the cattle mutilations in the late 70s, early 80s. And you know who Tom Adams was from Paris, Texas.
Yes.
I was doing some collaborating with him during that time, and I was talking to sheriffs and ranchers. I'd even investigated a couple of mutilations in Idaho, and of course it was all the same. You know, they said there was no blood, there was, you know, no tracks around the animal, and animals wouldn't go near it, predators wouldn't touch it, and just all kinds of weird stuff. But, you know, the one thing, and I have to ask you this, Tom Adams said that the ones that were happening in Texas area, he said that they were marked with infrared on their backs, and they could see it at night. So they were picking out ones that were marked, and they think they were airlifted, and a lot of them had broken bones. Did you find that on the ranch?
Yeah, there, I have heard, and it's so interesting. I've been pulling out a lot of these old UFO magazines, the UFO reports, and many different older magazines from that era, looking in particular at this phenomenon. Now, you know, I'm not, nor I claim to be the cattle mutilation expert by any stretch of my imagination, but I was just recently reading an article about that, and not only that, I came across an interesting article that speaks of a glitter that some of the investigators were finding on some of these mutilated animals, like a substance, and it says in the article where it was taken and how it was tested and that, and I think, you know, I don't know if you remember, it's been maybe, I don't know, eight, 9 years ago, there was the cattle mutilation phenomenon has been solved. It's just the intestines exploding naturally. It's natural causes.
It's predators.
At that time, I kind of bought into that, and I'm like, oh, but the more I dig and the more, you know, talking to Chuck Zukowski or Christopher O'Brien or, you know, or Linda Howe, and this phenomenon, although it's not to the height it was in years past or in decades past, but this is still occurring, and there are some very unusual circumstances surrounding these mutilations. And what people also tend to, they just think of cattle or cows, but we're talking, you know, Snippy the horse. I mean, that was, you know, Dr. Leo Sprinkle was with APRO, and APRO investigated that mutilation of a horse, and the horse's name was actually Lady. They got it wrong in the articles, and Snippy just kind of stayed with that. But that was out there in Alamosa. And I find that interesting as well, because you're looking at either side of the Colorado Springs area. So you have Elbert County to the north and Alamosa, you know, more to the south. And in between these areas, you have multiple Air Force bases and NORAD. And so one of the questions I always had about some of the phenomena that was happening out there at the Clearview, or I'll call it the Elbert County Ranch, was how much of this was, you know, Black Access military projects, and how much of it was actual, truly unknown, mysterious phenomena.
Right. And so many black unmarked helicopters have been seen, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was a phenomenon in itself. And in fact, you know, like I said, one of the questions was, well, first of all, did we have silent helicopters back then in the mid-70s to late 70s? I mean, they weren't exactly stealth, but you could quiet them down. But in interviewing the undersheriff's widow and his son, you know, they talked about these big balls of light, sometimes white, sometimes orange, just flying off property. And these were not helicopters. Multiple witnesses saw these really, really, really bright, bright lights that made no noise, that clearly were not helicopters. Mm-hmm. But yes, there were newspaper articles I had uncovered that not only were these strange unmarked black helicopters flying on and off property and around, and sometimes even in connection with the mutilations, but they were menacing and chasing people. I found an article where they were chasing two young teenage girls. And
oh,
I was
my
like,
goodness.
Why in the world would helicopter pilots be chasing kids and scaring the bejesus out of them? You know, I mean, what was that all about? And at a conference, actually, in Laughlin, Nevada, I ran into Richard Doty, and I was curious to ask him two questions I wanted to know if he was aware of the property out there in Elbert County. Did they even know about it, meaning Air Force? Did the Air Force know about it? And his response was yes, they did. So, and we have in Dr. Leo Sprinkle's archives, in his records, there's records of military personnel from Camp Carson being on the ranch property, as well as correspondence with the sheriffs from both NORAD and the Air Force Academy. So we very much know that they were aware of what was happening out there. Now, how much involvement they had in all that, I don't know. And for me, it was always the chicken and the egg question. Were the,
right.
the helicopters out there and the military out there, you know, were they looking for answers just like the rest of us, or were they causing some of the phenomenon? And I think where I am right now with it, all these years later, is I think it's a combination of both. I don't think it's either or at the same time.
So do you think the military was colluding with the aliens and still are? I do.
Well, you know, that could be, you hear, and this, so one of the first things that were reported out there on the ranch property were these strange humming noises and these bangs under the ground. And so it was like, is there cistern? Was it coming from the cistern? Is, you know, is there a generator? Well, where is this coming from? And it was never solved. They could never figure out where this hum came from. And what's really fascinating to me, so just recently, you know, I had the fortunate experience of filming with Beyond Skinwalker for a week out there, and
oh, wow.
That was the first. Yeah, that was the first time I had been back on that property since I was a young girl. So as you can imagine, I was filled with all sorts of anxiety and fear because I've been researching it for 11 years. I haven't been back. I haven't met the people who live there now, and the people who live there now have lived there since the sale of when I was a young girl. So all these years, the same family has lived on this property, and I didn't know what they have experienced. I didn't know if they knew about the history of the property. And what I can really say about filming was the film crew and the producers of the show were absolutely adamant that I do not meet or step foot or talk to anybody that was involved on the show until cameras were rolling. So what you see there is very genuine. And it was so funny because that first time being back on the property, it was getting dark. So we're headed in my Jeep up to the gate of the property, and it's getting dark. It's like dusk. And I was like panicking, and they had cameras rolling and all. I'm panicking because I wanted to get up to where the ranch house sits in the daylight so I could see. I didn't want to be there in the dark.
Right.
But luckily for me, we got up there just before the sunset, so I was able to recognize the house and the trees and the silo, the way everything sat. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I remember the A, B, C, and D. And it was a really interesting experience to go through that.
Tell the listeners where it's located.
Yeah, it's in Elbert County, Colorado. And Elbert County, Colorado is east of Denver. It's still pretty rural. I mean, of course, back in the mid to late 70s, it was much more rural than it is today. But still, you know, we have a lot of, you know, cattlemen out there raising cattle and horse and whatnot. So it's still pretty rural, but there's different little towns in Elbert County, Colorado. We have Franktown and Elizabeth and Kiowa and Rama. And here's another interesting thing. So you think of the Skinwalker Ranch or the Elbert County Ranch, and you think the phenomena is isolated just to these specific ranches, but that's not true at all. This affected, you know, this whole area of Elbert County. I've interviewed people now that lived in Elizabeth and Franktown and Rama. And so it's really interesting, and the terrain of the area is pretty similar to the Uinta Basin. They're both very highly magnetic areas. They both have aquifers that run under, so there's this magnetism and this water element and certain, different, you know, limestones and granite and those kind of things. So I find that an interesting piece of the puzzle in looking at these high strangeness locations. But, yeah, I mean, this affected, you know, a few hundred people that had strange experiences, and it's still continuing to this day, which is also something I just recently learned when we were filming. You know, because when you're out there for a week and you're filming, you drum up some curiosity, like, what are you guys doing out here? You know,
and, right.
And then people start opening up to you about what they've experienced. And to me, that's all part of the process and why I do what I do. So people have a voice and we can finally get to the bottom of perhaps what was going on out there.
Now, I bet people get dizzy and things because, like you said, the magnetic field there, or maybe radiation radon like Skinwalker, because they've had some bad things happen to the team there with the radon or the radiation. You know, it'll spike.
Right, and
all of a sudden there won't be
right.
any, and then suddenly they'll be hit. So do you know,
right,
have you experienced any of that?
Yeah, that's something that it didn't make the episode. I think I'm okay to talk about it. But one of the first things I did, and I really like the show because just like with Skinwalker Ranch, they are scientific. They launch rockets. They're trying to collect data. And a couple things interesting. Now, this did make the show. That hum noise started up, and they were able to capture that. So that was validation and super cool when we were up near the cistern, that hum started back up. But one thing we did do is we went to the original structure of the house. So what the new owners had done, so there's the original ranch house from my childhood memories, and they added an addition on either side of the original house and out front. So basically you have the old ranch structure still there with the additions added to it. And that's why when I first saw the house, I'm like, it's in the right location, but it looks different. And that's why, because they had added additions onto it through the years. But we went and we measured the radiation around the new structures of the ranch property and the old mm-hmm. structures. So we're talking the cistern, the well, the silo, the original house structures, the foundations, and everywhere that was original to the property, they had high readings. The newer places had low readings, so that was interesting.
Hmm. Wow.
And then that first night we were filming, we had a whiteout blizzard conditions. Like, we knew it was going to snow and we'd have weather, but we didn't think it was going to snow that hard. So we're out there. It's getting close to midnight. We have our headlamps on, and they want me to walk them back to the tree line. Now, how this ranch property is, so your listeners can understand, it's very like flat land and prairie in a lot mm-hmm. of the areas out there in Elbert County, but we have areas that are really heavily treed with ponderosa pines, but they're in these like patches of trees. And you can see Pikes Peak in the distance, okay? And so in the tree line, you know, that's something I recall almost more than anything else, was that heavy feeling of being watched all the time. And I was always afraid, especially at night, of that ponderosa tree line. And one of the experiences I had as a young girl, this happened in the daytime. Me and the youngest son and my mom's boyfriend at the time, we were in a pickup truck with the hound dogs, and we were driving towards, there was like a dirt road that led behind the ponderosa pines, and he needed to get something out of this little outbuilding, which interestingly enough was not there. And I remembered it being there. So when I was meeting with the original family, they had brought out all these original photos of when they first purchased the land. And I'm like, there's that outbuilding. They had torn it down, but he had a picture of it. And that was another cool validation for me, because I remembered in my mind stopping at this outbuilding to get something out. So we were out of the pickup truck. Mm. That strange humming noise kind of sounded like if you ever stood under like electrical wires and you have that hum or buzz.
Sure.
That started up. And I looked back about 3 to 4 feet off the ground is this unusual box with lights on it making this noise. And my mom's boyfriend is yelling at me, and the youngest son, to get back in the truck. It's the box. He's yelling at us. And I look back, and that box was just gone. So,
oh, my goodness.
And I didn't talk about these strange boxes for a long time, because disappearing boxes, who encounters these things? But as I've been speaking and talking, this is a phenomenon. I just did a podcast a week and a half ago out of the UK, and they've had an encounter with a disappearing mysterious box. That's happened at Skinwalker Ranch. It happened with Trey Hudson down south. There's the Hudgens case. You know, it just keeps coming up. So I'm like, that is really, really interesting. But yeah, being out there in that blizzard, and then to have these unusual tracks just show up in the snow out of nowhere. It was like you could see just a blanket of white snow with no tracks, and then all of a sudden these unusual bipedal, they weren't deer or elk or animal, come out of nowhere, and they go for maybe 12 feet, they disappear, and then you see them again, and then they disappear again, as if something almost like came out of the ground, walked, went under, came up and walked and went under. And that's in the episode as well. And I'm really glad they captured that, because I'm like, wow. So many things happened. It was just amazing.
So go back to the footprints. Were those humanoid, yes, or were they more reptilian?
They look larger than a human print. And, you know, again, they were so John Schussler is one of the founding fathers of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and he's here in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And when he learned of my connection to the ranch, he had the original APRO briefing document, the one you can still, if you search the APRO Rocky Mountain Ranch or Colorado Ranch, you can find this APRO report online. Anybody can pull up the PDF on it online if they do an internet search. But he gave me the original unredacted version. And what's fascinating about that is they had the reports from back in the 70s of all the witnesses, and they talked about these cryptids out there. So you're talking, you know, Sasquatch creatures, these large and mysterious birds, some that look like phoenix or thunderbirds were seen out there. And not only there, you know, in Kiowa and Elizabeth, but also in Franktown as well, there were reports of these big thunderbird-type cryptid birds being seen out there. I do believe they have reports of that as well at the Skinwalker Ranch and other high strangeness ranches. So to me, those prints were reminiscent of possibly a Sasquatch. Larger than a human. They were definitely not animal. They were not like small. They were pretty large. And the camera crew got them, and I was happy for that because it was blizzarding too so bad that our footprints were even filling up pretty fast because the snow was coming down so hard. But I'm like, how do these just show up out of nowhere like that?
Really?
And it was also cool because I was like the first one out there. I was like kind of leading the pack, so to speak, kind of going over the barbed wire fence, walking them towards the tree line where I had seen this disappearing box. And I'm like, what are those? You know, so it was very like, everybody's like, I have no idea. So it was really cool that they caught that. Yeah.
That's amazing. Katie, would you tell the story, the frightening story, when your family was at the ranch and you were celebrating one of your brother's birthdays? And do you have the recording of what you made of what, you know, it's similar to what you had heard? Can you play that?
I can maybe pull it up on my computer here. But
can
yeah,
you?
So
okay.
That... let me try. I've never tried it before, but I don't know why.
Oh, okay. That'd
couldn't.
Be cool.
So,
okay.
Let me pull it up here why I'm telling you what happened. So it was a weekend. Like I said, we commuted the boys back and forth on the weekends, and this happened to be the boys' mother's birthday, and we were all celebrating. And it's interesting. I have pictures. People are like, well, how does that work? Because it was sort of the 70s. My mom's boyfriend, his ex-wife or the boys' mother also had a new love interest. So it's interesting when you read the APRA reports, you see, you know, the names they gave Barbara and Jim and John. That's what that was. It was the ex-husband, her boyfriend, they didn't use their real name, so I'm trying to be careful not to, even though the three adults in the situation are all deceased because they never left them public. But so that's kind of how it was. But we celebrated like Thanksgiving together. We were there for the mother's, you know, it was a divorce that was not tumultuous, you know, so we would celebrate things together. And it was the mother's birthday. We were all there. All the adults were playing board games in the front of the ranch house. And my sister and I and three boys were hanging out in the boys' bedroom. when that hum would start up. And when that hum would start up, and sometimes the hum would get so loud that you couldn't hear each other talk over it. And everybody would get like antsy or nervous when that hum would start up, because it seemed like when the hum would start up, unusual things would happen. They had a lot of paranormal things happen. The mother experienced paralysis, and some of her visitors that came from out of town had paralysis and unusual things happen. So that hum started up. And when that started, all the lights in the house, the power went out of the house. So here we are in the dark. Everybody's panicking. That's when I see, and I describe it as being brighter than the sun. It was the brightest light out of that front window of the boys' room that I'd ever seen in my life. And so that's going on. Everybody's panicking. And that's when we heard that disembodied electrical voice. And I'm going to try and play it here for you.
Okay. Cool.
And for me, it was such a – hold on, let me find it. All right, I'm going to just play it off the PowerPoint. But for me, it was such a validation, because in the Apple bulletin that John Schuessler had given me, he's like, in there is the exact quote from the adults at the time that were being interviewed for the investigation of exactly what it said. And both my sister and I had very vivid, terrifying memories of this night. And let me see. Hopefully you guys can hear it. So hold on. I'm going to go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me hear it. Okay. And I tried to recreate that to the best of my, 11-year-old memory. But basically, it says, "Attention, we have allowed you to remain. We have interfered with your lives very little. Do not cause us to take action, which you will regret. Your friends will be instructed to remain silent concerning us." And it sounded like a disembodied electrical voice. Now, that could be the military trying to scare us off. So
that's what I was
my question. Yeah, like
that's what I felt.
Yeah, but the thing with that is that property sat vacant for over 10 years. Why wouldn't they have just purchased the property, or why would they allow a family to purchase it, and why would they go through the trouble of these hums and these Sasquatch and the unmarked helicopters? I mean, these mutilations were going on almost nightly. We had, a $10,000 reward from the Cattlemen's Association actively looking for whoever's mutilating cattle, not only cattle, but horse and sheep and other animals as well. People were like on edge and terrified. We had the Colorado Bureau of Investigations involved. I mean, I had no idea at the time that this was such a big thing until I started researching it, a decade ago. I'm like, holy smokes, there was a
wow.
And even the sheriff, the undersheriff, they were working vigilantly with, the Colorado Bureau and like you had mentioned, Texas and other states were experiencing these mutilations as well. Elbert County was hit the hardest by a long shot, but I really don't think that the military would have gone through the lengths they did just to try and scare the people at the ranch when the ranch was vacant for so many years. And not only that, but interviewing, neighbors and people that had pioneered the area and looking at the history of the location itself, they have activity of these orange orbs and unusual activities predating all of this stuff in the 70s. So I came across, it's the old Mulligan property, and I was researching the Mulligans, and there was an article I found online about, and you can also research this, but there's a Dick Mulligan that was born and raised on that very ranch property.
Now, Dick Mulligan in his later years became the caretaker for the Winter Park Ski Resort. And in fact, they named one of the black ski runs called Mulligan's Mile. And it's still there to this day. And so there was an article written about Dick Mulligan. And he was known as an Irishman from, you know, Elbert County, Colorado, who had a bold exaggeration and a gift of gab and like telling these tall tales. And in my mind, I'm thinking, this guy was born and raised on this ranch property. I think he was trying to tell people what was happening out there. And people were going, oh, Dick, you're such a cut up, you know, you're a tall tale.
Sure.
I just thought that was so funny.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Who would believe that? I know it's so outrageous that, you know, how could they believe it? But, you know, you were experiencing all this. And I want to ask you about the blue orbs because Dr. Artie Clark, who interviewed so many Native Americans throughout the West and went into Central America and talked to the indigenous, have experienced these blue beings that have this aura of blue around them, and they're benevolent. They have helped save people. Did you see, you saw the blue orbs, didn't you? What do you feel about them?
It's so interesting because, you know, like so many people, we all have our own unique reasons for kind of getting into this realm, whether it's, you know, Sasquatch or the paranormal or UFOs. And for me, I kind of, there were so many paranormal things that were happening around me pretty much my whole life. I kind of started in that realm. And it wasn't until I was watching a documentary on television that I learned about MUFON and became an investigator and joined MUFON and all that, because I thought, you know, what was all that stuff on the ranch? What was all that? And that's how it all started for me. But it wasn't, and when I first started on my UFO journey, I was always looking for the blue ones. I'm like, where are the blue ones? Where are the blue ETs? Mm-hmm. Where are the blue aliens? And it was right after I purchased that book, that Hunt for the Skinwalker, and I started on this journey of my Clearview Ranch investigation. It was right after that, and I'm talking just a few months after that, I experienced this basketball-sized blue orb in my room. And thank goodness I had journaled about it. And I always tell listeners, like, if you ever have unusual things happen to you, I don't care what it is, journal it. Write down the date, the time, and all the details that you can think of, because our minds tend to forget things or forget, you know, remember things maybe wrong a little bit. And I'm really happy I wrote this down, because I had forgotten. At the time, my boys were into Legos, and there was a Lego bucket, a red Lego bucket of Legos in my bedroom. And what had woken me up out of a dead sleep was that Lego bucket falling over. And so I wake up out of a sleep, and I look into the corner of my bedroom, and there, just hovering in my room, was a basketball-sized-shaped blue orb. And I'm just, you know how you do when you're just waking up, I'm like trying to adjust my eyes, like, what am I seeing? What am I looking at? The smoke detector's right inside the door. I'm like looking at that. I'm like, no, I'm looking at the red cable box, the red light. No, but that's how long it hovered there, to the point where I was able to wake up my husband at the time. I'm like, you know, Steve, wake up. What is this hovering in our room? He gets up and he sees it, and thank goodness for that. Yeah. Otherwise, I thought I was like going crazy or whatever. And as this is going on, the auto light of the people that live behind us was going on and off of the house. And as Steve's kind of getting a vision on this blue orb, it just sort of like imploded in itself. But what I took from that basketball-sized blue orb, it felt very intelligent to me. It felt almost like something monitoring or something. I wasn't afraid of it, that's for sure. It's a very soft blue color. It was lighter on the outside and a little denser and darker on the inside of the sphere. But it just felt intelligent to me, as if it was just monitoring or something. And I didn't say anything about this experience until Skinwalkers at the Pentagon came out. And in fact, all the paranormal things that happened at my house, which is a good hour away from the ranch, the shadow beings and that, I separated from the phenomena at the ranch. I never connected any of those dots. It was like I have shadow beings and I feel watched and I have paranormal things at the house and all these other things, but I didn't tie them to the ranch until you started hearing testimony from other people that visit these high strangest locations that get these attachments or whatever, you know, and have these same kind of experiences with the balls of light, the shadow beings and that. And I was like, oh, maybe it is connected.
So do you feel that you've been abducted? You have missing time, don't you? And some of these things that have happened to you and maybe your kids too.
Yeah, it's interesting with the kids. I have five adult children, and it's interesting because they all have very different experiences with, I guess, the phenomenon, as my sister and I do it too as well. So I don't know what that's about, and I find that really interesting. What was the other question? I'm sorry, I missed the
point. Well, just about missing time, and I feel that
you have that.
Yeah,
Dr. Sprinkle, you know, since he knew of my ties to the ranch and my experiences, he wanted to put me under hypnosis. So I did do an hour and a half session with Leo. And it took me a good week to listen back to that session. It was a really cool experience. I'm glad I was able to do that. I don't consider myself an abductee. I've had strange dreams. I have really kind of these strange, I guess you call them memories of things that I question. And the night of that disembodied electrical voice, when we left the property and drove back home to our house, which I said is an hour away, when we got home, it was quite late. It was like 1 a.m. And I just remember walking through the front door and laying on the ground. And I was like paralyzed for several minutes. My mom and my sister are yelling at me, what did you eat? What did you eat? What's wrong with you? And it took me a while to be able to talk, like, I don't know, a good minute. I was trying to say peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I remember.
Oh, no.
And my sister, they finally, you know, I come to, they get me upstairs in my bedroom. And that night, that very night of that rant, of that disembodied voice, I had a full-blown, like, tunnel vision, you know, vomiting, migraine headache. And I suffered with those severe migraines for a few years after that until I finally went through a biofeedback training, which was new at the time, there in the late 70s, and did that biofeedback training for over a year to get the migraine headaches under control. But I'll never forget, that was the very first night I had my first full-blown migraine, was on that very night. And I find that strange, you know.
It is strange, yeah. I think something happened to you, Katie. I feel you really did have an experience. Talk about the hitchhiker phenomenon. So is that poltergeist activity? Have you had that? You know, a lot of people at Skinwalker have had that.
Yeah, very much so, and still have it to this day. And like I said, I kind of compartmentalized all that and separated it from the ranch phenomenon. And I never did finish the story, too, with the you had mentioned the possible radiation attacks or whatever. And so that night of the blizzard, the next day, with the footprints and everything, the next day was a day off from filming. And so my daughter and I, she had come up, and I'm like, you know, it was really cold. I was underprepared. I want to go to the outlet stores and get some, you know, long johns and gloves and hats or whatever. And we're just out shopping and having lunch, and my back started hurting. And I'm like, man, something's really bothering me on my upper shoulder, on my upper left shoulder. And I had my daughter look, and there on my shoulder, well, it's about the size of a handprint, but it's only three. It looks like almost three claw marks on the back of my shoulder, like a burn.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was blistered. Yeah, it's blistered. Oh. So I'm like, I was wearing a vest, a hoodie, a coat. I mean, I had every piece because I was underprepared for the snowstorm. So, you know, whatever jacket I could find, I had on when we were filming. And so whatever got my back went through layers of, you know, shirts and sweaters and hoodies and jackets. And they don't know if it's a radiation burn, if something touched my back. But they did film it. I don't know if they'll put it in a future episode or not, but it felt very much like an attack. In fact, my daughter was kind of flipping out about it. She's like, Mom, you need to be careful out there. Like, we went and bought white candles, mm-hmm. you know, did some protection, because I don't know what I'm dealing with there. Cause you're right. That hitchhiker effect is very much real. It's like, it feels like hauntings or poltergeist activity around you. Those kind of things happen and continue to happen. And they tend to get more intense at certain times than others, which I don't know. I've tried to journal and figure out why it's amping up and why it's calming down. Why is it amping up and calming down? But it tends to be some sort of a pattern like that.
It sounds like it. I know Robert Bigelow, who owned Skinwalker before Brandon Fugel purchased it, he said that he had the skin, the hitchhiker phenomena. And he said it's been pretty scary. So, I wonder what that is. You know, if are you dealing with reptilians or are who knows what, demonic entities? It's hard to tell what you're dealing with.
It is hard to tell. And you know, it's not talked about on the show because there's certain topics they don't like to touch on. And that's one of them. And mm-hmm. and there were, you know, I don't know if there were certain gateways or portals opened up. I mean, the history of the location is wrought with a lot of trauma. I don't know if that kind of trauma in history is retained in our water and our land and spiritual mm-hmm. beliefs. And the, you know, even with Skinwalker, they talk about, you know, the Native American, you know, lore of the Skinwalker and the Ute and the Cherokee and these disputes they were having and spells and that. So, you know, all of that plays a role. And very close to the location of the ranch, we have the Hungate family massacre, which was the precursor to the Sand Creek Massacre, which was one of the nation's most brutal, horrific attacks on Native Americans. I mean, we're talking children and women, and it was awful. And what's really fascinating about that Hungate Massacre, just recently, in the last month, I had a young man, he's 29 years old, reach out to me and said, hey, look, you know, I grew up in Elbert County, and I had my family and I have experienced these very unusual things. And so I met with him and had an interview with him. Turns out the property that he experienced these things was the Hungate family property.
Wow.
So, and I'm like, okay, new piece to the puzzle. So that could be something like that happening. And my question then becomes, if something like that is opened up in these high strangest locations, portal or a gateway that hasn't been closed properly and things are just kind of trickling out of it, perhaps. I don't know.
Katie, I did a lot of investigation, wrote a book called Stargates, like my show name, and I found that mm-hmm. there's portals all over the world where UFOs are seen coming and going. People vanish in these areas. Just weird things go on, cattle mutilations. And so I think there are stargates where portals open up to dimensional beings and everything else. And ETs, I think they travel through them.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And in fact, you know, watching, if you haven't seen it yet or your listeners haven't seen it, I highly recommend David Pilati's new film, Missing 401, The UFO Connection. And that film, they mention, it's so good. And that's another, you know, terrifying phenomenon that happens are these missing people in our national parks and elsewhere. But he mentions at the end of that show the abduction at Medicine Bow. It occurred in 1974. Up north, so we're, you know, in the kind of close to Laramie, Wyoming, northern mm-hmm. Colorado area. of this gentleman who had a very unusual encounter while he was hunting elk, and he was shooting at an elk, and the bullet just kind of, it's almost as if it hit an invisible wall. He mentions a box in that. He mentions ET beings. Very interesting case, but he mentions, that's kind of where I got when David Pilates mentions the aquifers. And that, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, you know, and it got that question sparked in my mind to where I started looking at what aquifers are under Elbert County and where the ranch property sits, two aquifers come together, the Dawson Creek and the Denver. And I thought that was unusual because, again, you have that high magnetism in the water in certain minerals. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, is that a magic formula with the right frequencies, the right situations, or the right mindset? Or I just think it's like a melting pot of the right ingredients to maybe open up these doorways or gateways. And you're right, they are found everywhere around the world. Sacred sites, sacred places were built mm-hmm. at these locations. Mm-hmm. Maybe, right. you know, our ancestors knew more about them than we do, you know, and how to work with them and manage them and communicate.
I think so. Yeah, we need to, you know, think about this, you know, and really discover what these things are. I mean, they were so much smarter than we are. I just think because we're disbelievers, we're such skeptics, aren't we? We just don't want to believe anything. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about these topics, it's like, really? And I really, I battle with that every day of having my skeptical side and then my, well, but this happened side, but it seems so like, how is this happening? It's like reality, but an alternate reality, you know, and maybe our military was aware of some of the unusual things that were occurring at the time. And that's really what my research is bringing me to, is that these phenomena were going on for decades, and for whatever reason, these animal mutilations just really kicked up a notch. And I think they were out there trying to figure out what the heck was going on. When I flew to Florida to interview the undersheriff, Bill Wallace, widow Gene, and his son Keith, fabulous people, and getting to hear what they experienced as a family. And this is the, you know, the undersheriff of the town. And he encountered that strange disappearing box. He was out on patrol. He knew where the roads were. You know, he's a patrolman. He knows the town very well. You know, small town. He sees this lit box next to this tree. He sees it. He doesn't want to approach it because he's dealing with all these, you know, he's dealing with the mutilations and, you know, orbs flying off his property and all these unusual things. They were up in planes all the time looking for things. And anyway, so he sees a box. He goes back to town to get a posse sheriff because he didn't want to approach the box himself. Him and the posse sheriff they have eyes on this box and this tree. And he says it appeared that the box and the tree both went into the ground and disappeared. So they witnessed that happening.
Whoa.
Yeah, and that's in the report as well. So, you know, it wasn't just one or two people claiming to have an experience with this box. It's several people, including the undersheriff, mm-hmm. that witnessed this. So you're like, what is going on with that? What is that box? And a lady came up to me one time after a conference, and she goes, you know, I was thinking about these boxes and these strange noises because they emit a frequency of sound, like it was described as like bees or angry bees or a hum. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in interviewing the ranchers where the mutilations are occurring, one thing that one of my witnesses had mentioned to me, she said, you know, Katie, one thing that came out as a common occurrence is in the pastures where these mutilations were occurring, the cattle would all huddle together and were really calm, mm-hmm. almost like in a trance-like state. In the adjoining pastures, the cattle were all freaked out and spooked.
Yeah.
And a woman came up to me. She goes, I wonder if those boxes were emitting some sort of a frequency or that would calm and huddle the cattle together.
you know,
I
so they could take them
it.
And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Or was it a communication device? I don't know.
You know, it's interesting that a lot of people have captured UFO cubes up in the sky. I don't know if you ever saw that one that was taken over El Paso, Texas, a few years ago. But there's this cube up in the sky. It's a dark cube, and there's just a lot of them up there. Do you think that might be related to what people are seeing on the ground?
It could be. And the more, yeah. you know... The more you research, I wish there was somebody who would just take on the cube phenomenon, because it is. We get reports of cubes and people capturing these cubes on video and photographs, and they're clearly, I mean, talk about really poor aerodynamics. What are you flying around in a cube for? But
how can
we
they fly?
Have reports of them.
That's crazy.
Like boxes. Yeah. But yeah, there are reports, reports of these strange boxes. Right?
That's something. No, yeah, there's just so many weird things out there that we, you know, we think we know the Earth, but, you know, the ocean only, you know, 70% of the ocean we haven't discovered, you know, and there's just places all over the world that we just don't know, you know, it's just mysterious areas. Yeah.
Right, and you talk about, you know, the bangs and the sounds and the hums from underground, that brings up the whole topic of are there... underground tunnels. Is there something hidden under the ground?
Absolutely.
And if you research, you know, the Dulce and, you know, from NORAD, so you go up from New Mexico through Colorado Springs, through Alamosa, through Elbert County, up, you know, at the time it was Stapleton Airport, but now we have the Denver International Airport. There's a lot of mystery and intrigue surrounding the Denver International Airport. So I've been on, you know, Google Earth looking at, okay, maybe we're digging tunnels up through, you know, into Cheyenne, the Francis Warren. Francis Warren has its own unbelievable UFO history over the, you know, the nukes being multiple mass sightings over Francis Warren and Cheyenne up into Malmstrom in Montana. Are there tunnels that run right through these states? And that's something that has been rumored and looked into as well, and that's a possibility too. And that would answer the questions of why the cover-up. I mean, if we are working with ETs and they are tunneling, maybe that's, you know, why we have the military presence and the big cover-up. I don't know.
And I think they have bases underneath the ocean, some of our deepest areas of the ocean. They keep diving in the ocean. There's some reason they do that.
Yeah. Right.
So
right.
I was going to mention to you, my guest next week is Chris Bledsoe. And have you heard of him?
I have. He was on another episode of the Beyond Skinwalker. So.
Oh, yeah, right. He's going to be on my show. He's heard this humming, and he said he feels really weird. It's like electrified, the exact thing that you felt. Yeah. So he's going to talk about that. I can't wait to talk to him. But a lot of things
that
you've experienced. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is a feeling. And, in fact, when I went to visit the Blind Frog Ranch there in Utah and sat in the ponds there and everything – that was my first experience being back on kind of a high strangeness location other than with Trey Hudson down south. But I really wanted to feel if that same heaviness, because in Elbert County, it's definitely a sense of being watched. It's a heaviness. It's a feeling. It's eerie. It's a little uncomfortable. At Blind Frog, I did not feel that way. It felt very positive, and I didn't feel that way. I'd be curious to see if I felt that way at Skinwalker or some of these other locations. Now, I absolutely felt that way being back on the Elbert County Ranch, very much being watched. So I don't know what that sensation is or where it comes from, but it's interesting that Chris Bledsoe has that same thing, and he, too, has the humming noises and the strange buzzes and sounds. So. Yeah, I find that very fascinating, and the orbs in that as well. And I know, I think they filmed with him right before they came and filmed with me, and they were, you know, kind of telling me a little bit of all the activity. So I find that really fascinating,
what they're able to capture out there.
When are they going to have you on the Skinwalker Ranch show?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm waiting for an invite.
Well, my husband and I went out there. Of course, you can't get in, but we went to the sign, you know, and it's automated, and it tells you, turn around, you know, get out of here. So, you know, I didn't feel anything right there. Of course, I could, if I would have gotten on the property, maybe I could have felt something because I'm pretty intuitive. But no, they won't let you on unless you're invited. But I have a feeling you're going to be on that show.
Oh, I hope someday. I mean, if not, I would just like to be able to feel the activity. And one of the most intriguing kind of results we got from when I filmed with Beyond was this experiment they did with the ham radio operator. And they had set up all this equipment, and they set up a device inside the old structure of the house. And basically, we were trying to communicate with whatever was there. And the ham radio is trying to communicate with no responses, other people, no response. And so the producer of the show says, you know, this is like Katie's experience. We're here because of her. Let's see if she gets a response. And, of course, I can't. When you do ham radio, the guy has to hold the mic or whatever, so I'm just speaking into the thing. And sure enough, whatever is there was responding, and I was able to repeat that 3 times on the radio, and then the 4th time, just with my voice, was still getting responses, and all the equipment was just jumping to this frequency. And that was pretty unnerving, and that in combination with the thing on my back, I'm like, you know, something intelligent is responding to what I'm saying. And unbeknownst to me, and I hope I'm okay saying this, but I guess they're looking at different EVPs and signals that were coming through as that was happening that I was not aware of at the time. So they're still analyzing that data.
You know, I think some people like you and some other people that I've interviewed think you're all magnets for the paranormal. I mean, things just kind of come to you, you know, UFOs. No, I really do. I think certain people, you know, people that see UFOs all the time and have all these things happen, you know, a lot of them call them starseed. So maybe you're a starseed.
I don't know. I've heard that, and I've heard that too. And you know, if it's magnetism and that maybe something gets hardwired. I've been really interested in the phenomena too of disassociation, trauma, and connecting into things like that. You know, uh-huh. And you hear that just with reports in general. Why, you know, you can have a room of 10 people experience something and it affects one differently than the other, and I'm not sure if that's how our brains are wired or what that is, but it's definitely, you know, over and over. Interestingly enough, like I said, I've been kind of digging through these old magazines, and there's an issue of, I have it in my hand right now, it's a February 1979 issue of the UFO report, and I'm through this. Yeah, and in here it's says the Dale Wood sighting, UFOs of the High Uintas. And what I found fascinating about this is the whole article about the Uinta Basin in Utah around Skinwalker Ranch and how this phenomenon has been going on since 1968. It says more than 400 UFOs have been seen. You know, I think, like, even in my mind, I'm thinking like the Skinwalker Ranch phenomenon that was like the mid-80s. You know, that this kind of came to light. But same, this phenomenon out there in the Uinta Basin has been going on for decades and decades and decades and decades, and predates the Skinwalker Ranch, and that's true with Elbert County as well. And I think it might have been James Keenan I was talking to at a dinner one night, and he had mentioned the solar cycles or these solar flares that tend to kind of come in 7-year waves, where we get kind of more bombarded. The Earth gets more bombarded with magnetism. And it tends to, these high strangeness phenomenon seems to increase when that increases. And I think that's something he's looking into as well, which would be really interesting to see the results on that.
It would. Yeah, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Well, we've run out of time. But thank you so much. I could talk to you for hours.
The class interceptors. And I wanted to hear about your experiences, too.
Well, listen, why don't you give out all your information so people know where to find you, and if you have any upcoming events or TV shows and your book, when is that coming out? So let everybody know.
Yeah, you can find out all that great information at Katie Paige. And again, it's KATIEPAIGE.net. And I have all my upcoming appearances on there. You can get the book there. The link for the book is there. I'm hoping to have the new book out within the next 5 months. I'm right in the middle of it right now, but I really feel a push to get it done. Everything is there, and I love it. People can contact me through that website as well. And I really love when people reach out with their own experiences, because that's how we connect the dots and share
that's
with each
right.
other. So, yeah.
Well, Katie,
so
if you get
so
on
much
Skinwalker, thank you. But if you can Skinwalker and do something, invite me so I want to check
sure
it out.
Will.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. It's going to be a long weekend for everybody, a great Labor Day weekend, everybody. And next week is Christmas. Bledsoe, so tune in for that. It's at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And thanks again, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Katie. I hope to meet you.
Yeah, we will, for sure. Bye.
Bye-bye.